will be on YUTorah.org for anyone who would like to hear it again. Or if you would like to send it to someone else, this will be on the internet, God willing, sometime this evening or tomorrow. Okay, just an introduction to Megillat Rut. Why is Megillat Rut in Tanakh? Books in Tanakh usually have a reason for it being there. For the most part, it has to do with our history, with the Jewish people, mistakes that they've made over time, and the lessons are eternal, not just for that generation, but for many generations to come. And other times, it's about a single person, but a theological question or quest that that person had. Most famously, Iyov. The book of Iyov, which is a very large sefer, is about one person, about his life. But there are a lot of important theological questions. Tzadik v'ralo, of good things happening to bad people, accepting God's judgment. And so that has to do with the themes in Judaism. And so what does Megillat Rut have to do with anything that it's in the book of in the Tanakh itself? So a very famous answer that's brought in the Midrash is that it has to do with chesed. Ruth was kind. She was very kind to her mother-in-law. She was kind to the people around her. And that's a nice theme, very important midah that we hold in Judaism. But at the end of the day, we have stories in all of Tanakh that have to do with chesed. Avram and Sarah is the most famous one. You want to learn about Avram's chesed, Sarah's chesed, open up the Chumash, and you don't need Megillat Rut for that. So why is Megillat Rut any different? And so there's another suggestion. This is based on the Zohar Chadash. And another famous answer. And this has to do with the fact that Ruth is the great-grandmother of David HaMelech. And this is the beginning of the Davidic dynasty, the dynasty that will last for many, many years, and God willing, with the Mashiach, is going to come from the Davidic family, as opposed to Shaul's dynasty that only lasted one generation, and that was it for Shaul. And so we see from here that Megillat Rut is a little bit of a history book, learning and understanding the history and the family lineage of David HaMelech. Now, why is this important? Why is it important to know the family lineage of David HaMelech? Well, if you look in the book of Shmuel, where we're introduced with David, there's nothing really said about David's family. As opposed to Shaul, where we learn about Shaul from the moment he was born, even before that, with his parents praying for a child, the beginning of Sefer Shmuel, where Elkanah was married to Chana didn't have a child. She went to the Mishkan and prayed. Eli saw her and said, "You're drunk." And she said, "No, I'm not drunk." And there was a conversation there. At the end of the day, Eli said, "I am sorry. I must bless you and give you bracha. Choshed baksherim. I thought you were one way and I was incorrect. I made a mistake. You are really an amazing woman." And he gives her bracha that by this time next year, you'll have a child. And so we see that David, that Shaul is born, Shmuel is born from Chana and from Elkanah. And so we see a lot of times people are, their history is given. Then we fast forward to Shaul, eventually our king. And we know who Shaul is from. His father, his grandfather, his great-grandfather, where he lives, who his brothers are. There's a lot that we learn about Shaul, about his family. When it comes to David, we have the story of Shmuel coming to Yishai from Beit Lechem, which is where some of the story is going to take place in Beit Lechem. He comes to Yishai and he says, "I need to see your children, one of your sons is going to be the king." And he goes through 1 through 7. No, 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 no. Fairy tale, this is Cinderella, the beginning of Cinderella. And he asks, "Is there another child?" And he says, "Yeah, he's a shepherd." So we know his job, he's a shepherd. We know he's the youngest. But we don't really know much besides for his father being Yishai. What about his grandmother, his grandfather, his great-grandfather? What did Yishai do? What's the background of the story? We don't have much background. And so Megillat Rut is that background. We find out who is his great-great-grandmother. Where did it all start from? Now, why is that important? Why is it important? Why do we need 4 chapters in all of Tanakh to know David's lineage? So one can suggest that the importance of the Davidic dynasty is not just for 100 years. It's not just a tkufa, an era in Jewish history. It's basically the eternal Jewish history. Because eventually Mashiach comes from David HaMelech. And once again, we bring back the Davidic dynasty. So in essence, the Davidic dynasty lasts for centuries. We just don't know who the kings are now. But the dynasty will continue to last. And so this is the book of the Jewish people's history, but an eternal history. It's something that we need to know from the beginning stages, from David's great-grandmother and great-grandfather and so on and so forth, till we get to him. And eventually we're at a pause right now until finally the Mashiach comes. So this is important. And this is why some suggest that we read this on Shavuot. Shavuot is the yard site, the day that David HaMelech passed away. And so since it's the day that he passed away, we recount the history, where who his grandparents were, where did they come from, and how did all of this begin. There are other suggestions why we read Megillat Rut on Shavuot. Another suggestion has to do more of just the history of the time. Megillat Rut, surrounded by fields and agriculture and the harvest, and Shavuot is also the time of the harvest. Chag HaKatzir, it's the time of the harvest, and so since it's the harvest, we also read about harvest on Shavuot itself. So let's begin reading the Pesukim and try to understand a little bit as the text as to what's going on in the story. Before we begin, just one more question. Who wrote Megillat Rut? It's not Rut. But who wrote Megillat Esther? It is Esther. But who wrote Megillat Rut? So Megillat Rut was written by Shmuel. So if it was written by Shmuel, it must be that it's around the lifetime of Shmuel. It must be that Shmuel lived around that era. We're not talking about hundreds of years later, but at some point where the history could have been recorded, where there might have been eyewitness or some prophetic vision that was not so far off. Just like Shmuel wrote another book. Anyone know what else Shmuel wrote? Shmuel. But here's the tricky part. He didn't write all of Shmuel. Shmuel, that we have it now, is Shmuel Aleph and Shmuel Bet, part 1 and part 2, really is one long part. The breakup was made by the Christians when they broke it down into books and they broke it down into chapters. But it's really one really long sefer. And Shmuel dies around one-third through the entire Sefer Shmuel. So he began writing the book, but he didn't finish the book. Most of it was written by God in another Navi, or Natan, who was another Navi. They were both Nevi'im, both prophets. But it wasn't written by, all of it wasn't written by Shmuel. But we know that Megillat Rut is written by Shmuel. Now, when reading that, I think it's so interesting, because while Shmuel is writing about the beginnings of the Davidic dynasty, he's the one who goes ahead and anoints Shaul, the different dynasty. Shaul has his dynasty, and he anoints him, the first king, and then eventually he goes ahead and he anoints David. So you must imagine the leader of the time, the prophet of the time, the inner struggle that he has. He writes about Megillat Rut, probably wondering why am I having this prophetic vision? Why am I writing this book? He goes ahead and he anoints Shaul as the king, his student, and then to find out that he's no longer going to be the king, and now he has to go ahead and anoint a new king. And we do see that in Sefer Shmuel, the struggle that Shmuel goes through, he mourns for David, for Shaul. God says, "Ad kama tamitabe, how much could you mourn for Shaul? It's time to move on. You're just a prophet. You got to do what I do. Why are you so attached to Shaul?" Shmuel is very attached to the people that were in his life. Shaul, he was very attached to. David, he wasn't so attached to, because he felt betrayed by Shaul and he couldn't get over the hump and find a new king and be with a new king. But that's in Sefer Shmuel, pitch for Wednesday night's Navi Shir, right, Sava? Good, okay. Had to throw a pitch in here. All right. And so this is beginning of the Davidic dynasty. Yes. Okay, so very good. So that's a tradition that's brought down in the Gemara and the Talmud.
What's the question?
How do we know that Shmuel wrote the Megillat Rut? Right. It's written in the Gemara, and so we will assume that there are some biblical scholars that wonder if all of it was written by Shmuel, maybe parts of it were, but for now, that's the opinion of the Gemara itself. It could have been written towards the end of his life. Correct. Oh, so you're saying if it was written towards the end of his life, when David was king, at that moment, he went back into the history. Oh, that's interesting. Okay. After you poured the oil on David. Very good suggestion. So what Saba suggests is that maybe he anointed, once after he anointed David and the Davidic dynasty began, at that moment we go back to the history and find out who his family is. And then he writes Megillat Rut. Yeah, definitely. Not everyone accepted Shaul. Yes. We're going to get to that a little bit this part. Right. We're going to get a little bit to that this part. Okay. So let's begin Pasuk Aleph. Vahibimei Shofet HaShofetim. It happened to be in the days of the Shoftim, of the judges. Vahira av ba'aretz, and there was a famine in the land. Vayelech ish mi Bet Lechem Yehuda. There was a man from Bet Lechem Yehuda. Lagu bisde Moav. He goes to live in the fields of Moab. Hu v'ishto ushnei vanav. He, his wife, and his two children. Okay, this first pasuk is, there's so much to talk about. A lot and lots of questions. So let's try to break it down a little bit and try, because this is really the first pasuk tells us a lot about the story of Megillat Rut. Vahi b'mei shofet ha-shofetim was the days of the judges, which means what era is the story happening in? Zman of the Shoftim, the era of the judges. Now we have Sefer Shoftim, Book of Judges, the second book in the Na part of Tanakh. Nevi'im, you have Yoshua, then you have Shoftim. So it's the book of Shoftim. So immediately one has to ask themselves, why isn't this part of Sefer Shoftim? If this has to do with the Tkfa, the era of the judges, then why not put it into the book of Judges? Because once we finish the book of Judges, Sefer Shoftim, we begin with Sefer Shmuel, which is the book of Kings. Not Sefer Malachim, the book of Kings, but the beginning of Kings. And so if the Tkfa, the era of Judges, end around the beginning of Sefer Shmuel, where Eli HaKohen is the last Shmuel is the last Shofet, Shmuel is the last of the judges, and Ruth falls somewhere in there, why not stick it into the book of Ruth, the book of Shoftim? That's question one. Question number two, why are there no names? Who is this Ish mi Beit Lechem Yehuda? Who is this person? Why did he move from Israel to go to Moab, of all places, to go to Moab? And also, why are we told of Beit Lechem Yehuda? How many Beit Lechems are there? How many Beit Lechems are there? So, tackle the first question. The Shoftim, the time, the era of the judges. So, the book of Judges itself is a very interesting book because there's what we call a Galgal HaChozer. It's like a revolving, we'll call it a revolving cycle, but a revolving door. Where what happens? Something happens. The Jewish people sin. God sends a enemy. They start to cry. They ask for a savior. Someone comes and saves them. Do tshuva. And then what begins after that? The same cycle. It goes on with every single shofet. There was a lot of uncertainty. There was no stability at the time. There was no leadership. You find so many shoftim. They come and go. One shofet comes, next shofet. And you can have a list of different of all the shoftim that are mentioned in the book of Shoftim. And so there was no leader. There was no stability. There was a lot of fighting amongst the tribes. There was no unity. And the beginning of the Jewish people in Eretz Yisrael was very shaky. And so what happens? In order for the antithesis, the opposite, the other side of the coin, of finding someone who could bring leadership, of finding stability, of finding social justice, that's the book of Ruth. Where we're going to read about Boaz, who seems to be a very strong, strong-willed, strong personality, and a leader who people listen to. We find Ruth, who is a woman of chesed, but not just a regular woman of chesed. Chesed to her mother-in-law. That's amazing, right? Chesed to her mother-in-law. You find chesed to people she might not even know. The things that she does for family. She goes out and gives birth to a child and basically hands it over to Naomi, her mother-in-law. It's unbelievable. Here's the social justice where she cares. Boaz cares about her. Wonders, who are you? Where are you from? Why are you here? Can I help you? And there's a lot that happens in the book of Ruth, which is supposed to be the response to the book of Shoftim. This is what happens in the book of Shoftim. Well, guess what? This is how you're supposed to act. This is how the era of Shoftim was supposed to be. So it's not a continuation of the book of Shoftim. It's the answer to the book of Shoftim. It's a separate book to answer that. So that being said, if we already know that she is the great-grandmother of David HaMelech, so it must be towards the end of the era. And in order to begin the Tkufa, the era of kings, the Jewish people have to already shift their mind. Things have to change. They have to come to the conclusion that we need a leader. We need someone who's going to lead us. A king, possibly a king. We need to have unity amongst the nations. And so when Shaul HaMelech goes on to fight wars with the enemies around him, you have all the Shvatim who come and they are backing him up. Even Shevet Yehuda, which you would think there was a lot of fighting between Binyamin and Yehuda, the two dynasties that are fighting with one another. Even Shevet Yehuda comes and helps Shaul. They realize the importance of unity at that crucial juncture of time between conquering Eretz Yisrael and now going to the next level, having a killing king and building Beit HaMikdash. So all of that is so important, and Megillat Rut is that transition. Shofet, yes? Excellent question. Shmuel objected to appointing a king, there's a lot to talk about that. There's really a lot to talk about Shmuel, and I'm happy you mentioned that. I actually didn't want to mention at Lent, but I'll regal acha on one foot. I'll mention something. The psukim indicate that the Jewish people want a king in the future. Yet there are other psukim that indicate God is not happy, does not want the people to have a king. The question is then, how do we understand that? So some answered the way they asked for a king. When they came to Shmuel, they demanded it to the point where they even, if you take a look at the words in Sefer Shmuel, where they denigrate and reprimand Shmuel and say, well, we need new shoftim, and yeah, you're old. They say, you're old, you know, it's time for you to retire, we need somebody new, your kids are not good for us, we don't want them. And so Shmuel felt a little like there was a, as they say, a shtach, right? They were coming after him and his family, so he felt uncomfortable with that. But eventually it happens, where they do have a king, and it is definitely something important to discuss. Maybe on Shavuot, we could discuss a little bit about that. Okay. So again, it was the days of when the judges judged. Some people read the word shofeta shoftim, people who judge the judges. Everyone has an opinion about something, right? So they're judging the judges. Oh, that's what they said. This is what they should have done. And so that's what people were saying at the time. And there was a famine, and this person left from Beit Lechem to go to Moab. Now, Moab on the map, and I meant to make copies. I meant to do a lot of things. But if this was the map of Israel right here, okay? This is the map of Israel. We're all facing Israel. On the left is the sea. On the right is Yam HaMelech, okay? My pointer, you can see Yam HaMelech right there. And Moab is on the east side of the Yam HaMelech, the other side of the Yam HaMelech, and south. So the corner of Yam HaMelech, the Dead Sea, the bottom corner on the right side, on the east side, that's where Moab is. So Beit Lechem is higher up, it's north of that. Beit Lechem Yehuda in this story is higher up, it's north. So they traveled southeast to get to Moab. And that's where Moab is. Now, that means they had to really travel a distance. Not a great distance, but they traveled. Now, why did they travel? There was a famine. And so they went to Moab. Now, all the places you're going to go to Moab, one of the enemy territories. So the Mefarshim go on to reprimand Elimelech, who we're going to read in Pasuk Bet, that he did the wrong thing. He was a rich man. He felt like there were going to be too many beggars, too many shnars coming at a time of famine. I don't have patience for all of them. I don't want to give them my money. So he goes to Moab, because Moab is known to be one of the countries that were not so benevolent and nice to strangers and to people who went through their land. How do we know that? From the Torah. The Pasuk says, Lo yavo Amon u'Moavi b'kahal Hashem. An Ammonite and a Moabite are not allowed to enter the congregation, enter the people. Meaning, even if they convert, we don't accept their conversion. Why not? Why wouldn't we do that? So the rabbis teach us, because when the Jewish people left Egypt and traveled through Moab, so Moab didn't help them with giving them water or food. Even though we wanted to buy it, we were ready to purchase it, they said, no, we don't want to help you out. And so because they didn't help them out, they're not allowed to marry someone from Moab. Now, the obvious question eventually is going to be, well, Ruth and Orpah are Moaviot. So the Gemara learns out from here, Moavi v'lo Moavit. So it teaches us that when it says Moavi, it means the male and not the female. Now, why would it be any different? So back then, the people who, whenever there would be guests coming through the street, so it would be the men who would come out, and they would be the ones to give water and food to the bypassers. And since the men didn't go out, it's them who we punish, but not the women. And so Moaviot are allowed to. So he goes to Moab. Nonetheless, it's a place that's not so friendly, but he knows it's not friendly. It's a town that we don't give money to beggars, to shnars, so they know not to come back the following year. And so he was hoping that if they don't come back, I'm not going to be bothered and asked for money. And so he is now in Moab. And we don't have the names in Pasuk Aleph. We're told the names in Pasuk Bet, but not in Pasuk Aleph. And it's a suspense. You know, you read the first place, you wonder, who are these people? Who are they? And we have another place of Ish Mi Bet somewhere. And that's, beginning of in Shemot, right? Ish Mi Bet Levi, right? Vaykach Ish Mi Bet Levi, a man from Beit Levi, the house of Levi, took a woman from the house of Levi. And we learned from there it was Amram and Yocheved. And there's a whole question why their names are not mentioned. But anytime in Tanakh, when names are not mentioned, you always have to ask yourself, why not? A, it's not important. It doesn't matter who the names are. It's not important to the story. B, we'll find out their names later, but there's a suspense. We want you to who's it going to be? And C, sometimes their names are mentioned in different books, and we hope to connect the puzzle and to figure out if these are the same people that other books mention. And we do that sometimes with other names or pseudonyms, nicknames. Who are Shifra and Puah? So we're not sure who are Shifra and Puah. They could be Shifra and Puah, or as Rashi likes to take, that there were Miriam and Yocheved, right? There are Miriam and Yocheved. But there are other Mefarshim who say Shifra and Puah are Shifra and Puah. Why are you assuming it's Miriam and Yocheved? Who is the daughter of Paro? The daughter of Paro. I don't know what her name is. Bat Paro, who went and took Moshe from the river. I don't know what her name is. The Torah doesn't say her name is. Later on in Divrei Hayamim, it says her name, Bitya Bat Paro. So what Chachamim wants to say, well, if we know that there was a woman by the name of Bitya, the daughter of Paro, let's connect the dots. We don't know who this woman is who grabbed Moshe from the water. So let's connect it and say this must be Batya. This must be Batya. Do we know it's her? Maybe. Probably, assuming that that's Bat Paro. But the question then is, why does the Torah not mention her name? And again, maybe it's not important to the story at this moment. Maybe it's the suspense. Maybe it's the act, and it doesn't matter who did it. We just know it's the daughter, the princess. It doesn't matter what her name is. The fact that the princess took a Jewish baby, wow, that's amazing. And so again, just in general, reading Tanakh always have those questions. Yes?
Going back to your question earlier, it seems to me the reason for the Book of Ruth is God is the actor in the background. That's because ultimately the kings deteriorated, just like the age of the judges deteriorated.
Right.
They became a mess too later on. But
very much.
But in natural history, you think of who would be the kings coming from? Natural nobility that would unfold over the generations. So you look at who is the prime family in Judah. It's Elimelech. His name says Melech in there. He's a wealthy guy. You'd think, like in the natural history of world history and of nations, the kings ultimately would come from him. Mm. But yet, the way God works it out, he leaves, and the whole purpose of him leaving is not even that he's going to get the royalty from it. It's to get a gair from another country that has nothing to do with his immediate family.
Exactly. And when we're going to the next pasuk, begin reading the names, there's a lot of discussion as to the background of the names and why were they named like that. And we're going to get to your point in one moment. Definitely, we're going to get to your point in one moment. So, okay, I promise we're going to finish Perek Aleph. I know we're starting slow in the beginning, but we're just trying to get out all the ideas of the book, and it's going to flow. It's going to begin to flow. Here we go. V'shem ha'ish Elimelech, v'shem ishto Naomi. Now we know the name. His name is Elimelech. And his wife's name is Naomi. V'shem shnei banav Machlon v'Kilion Ephratim. The names are Machlon and Kilion Ephratim. Beit Lechem Yehuda. They're from Beit Lechem Yehuda. Why is it mentioned Beit Lechem Yehuda? Because there were other Beit Lechem. There is a Beit Lechem in Binyamin, in Tanakh. There is another Beit Lechem in some part of Yehuda, another part of Yehuda, that there is another Beit Lechem. So the name Beit Lechem, many times, for example, the name Gilgal, the place Gilgal, is also mentioned many times in Tanakh and in different places on the map. So a lot of times it has to do with the function of the place. Why is it called Beit Lechem? That's where the wheat is, the harvest, and they made bread there. So it's a Beit Lechem, yeah? Just like you find always towns that you see, Springfield. I don't know, Springfield's in a lot of places. Friend Springfield, why? Must be very springy. for whatever reason, Springfield there. And so Beit Lechem Yehuda. So where do we have the names? Vayavot Sedei Moab Vayusham, and they were there. Now what happens? Vayamot Elimelech Ish Naomi. Elimelech, the husband of Naomi, dies. Vatisher hi ushnei baneah. She's left with her two sons. What does she have to do? She's got to give them, find them a shiduch. She's in Moab. Who are you going to find? Moaviot. No Jews are living in Moab. They marry. The Tanakh tells us they are Moaviot. We're not going to say they're not. They are Moaviot. They're Moabites. Shem achat opa b'shem hasheni drut v'yeshu sham k'esel sheni. So the two sons, her two sons of Machlon and Chilion, marry Orpa and Rut, and they live there for 10 years. So for sure, at the minimum of 10 years, they are living in Moab. Presumably, the Ra'av is the famine is last a very long time. It's lasting a very long time. What's with the name? In all of Tanakh, almost every name in Tanakh, the rabbis wonder why is that their name? And the reason why they ask that is because sometimes the names that are mentioned in Tanakh are not the names that were given to them at birth. And the name is a nickname to connote something that happened to them in their lives. Something that might have happened to them in their lives. And at times it is really their names. And at times parents give names based on situations. It's hard now to think that in this situation, the parents of Machlon and Chilion gave them their name at birth. Why? Because the Talmud teaches us, and I'll read it. I'm sorry, I meant to also give out the sources on this, but I'll read you their name, the names, and you'll see why it's so hard to understand that. And the names of the two sons were Machlon and Chilion. This is from Rut Rabbah, the Midrash. Machlon, because they were erased from the word Nimchu, and from the world, and Kilion because they were destroyed. Kalua. A Kilion is a destruction. They're also destroyed from the world. Meaning, they died. We're going to see that they died. The fact that they died, that's the what we learn from the names Machlon and Kilion. Now, why would a parent want to name their kid Machlon and Kilion, right? I know I never understood now in Israel, a lot of these names, Nimrod. Nimrod wasn't the best guy. I don't know Nimrod. I don't know. I just don't get it. I mean, Nimrod was not the best of people. I don't know, someone would call him Yishmael, Esav. Why would you want to name them after such a person? And so, they're not of Machlon and Kilion, if it's names of destruction, why would they name them that? And that's according to the Midrash. Others want to say, no, of course, there are other ways to read a name. The rabbis are viewing it in a very negative way because of, eventually, they died. But before they died, there must be something beautiful about the name. And what's that? So, for example, Merari, who is the son of Levi, Merari's son was Machil. Similar to the word, what? Michila, right? From the word Michila. It could be forgiveness. Sometimes from the word, or there's another name called Machol. Machol is a dance. Machol means to dance. Or from the word Kilion. Now we're looking at the name Kilion. There's another way to look at the word Kilion. Vaychulu Hashemayim v'arsachot tzavam. What does Vaychulu mean? To complete, to finish. So Kilion. Chal, Chulu. Again, you can play the word, you can take the name and figure out different ways to understand it. And so the question always is, why do the rabbis understand the name one way? Why do they take a name and find a certain either negative or positive way of spinning the name? And a lot has to do with the outcome of their lives. The rabbis say, well, this is what happened to them. It must be because they were destroyed and they were killed. Or you could see from the beginning of their life. Well, why would the parents name them that? It must be that the parents had other intentions, good intentions. And there's another hint that we could see in their names. Let's take the name Naomi. So what does the name Naomi mean? Pleasant, Noam. Right? The word Naomi, Noam, is pleasant. And the rabbis seem to be almost unanimous about looking at Naomi in a very positive light. You don't really find that many Talmudic or Midrashic sayings that show that have her in a very negative light. Later on, she looks at herself very, very badly. She calls herself Mara, bitter. And so she calls herself bitter because her life is bitter. And then towards the end of the Perek, she says things are ra, are bad. She went from being pleasant to being bitter to eventually things being really bad. So it's interesting just to see this, like what's going on through her mind. At first, things are bitter, and then eventually, when it really hits home, it's so difficult. They're really, really bad. Let's take another example, Elimelech. Okay, let's take now Elimelech. So Elimelech, you would say, wow, what a beautiful name, Elimelech. My God is king. It's great. Elimelech is such a great name. And so, why would we want to spin it in a negative way? How could you spin it in a negative way, right? The rabbis do spin it also negative. I'm just like, how would you spin it if you were the Rabbanim and you were wondering, now why would I want to spin his name in a negative way? Because why would he leave Israel? He left Eretz Yisrael. One of the Mefarshim say the reason why he and his sons died is because they left Israel. You can't leave Israel. And so he left Israel, or because he was stingy and he didn't want to share his money. So, not such a great person, Elimelech, in this story. Now, how do I get his name and spin it to being negative? So not Elimelech, but Elimelech. What is Elimelech? To me is the kingdom. Kings should come from me. I'm looking around, I see what's happening here in society. We need a leader. Kings are going to come from me. Let me be that person. I'm worthy, and my family is worthy, of having kings. And the irony of things is that the king doesn't come from Elimelech. He was hoping it would come from him. And what happens? His two sons die. They don't have children for 10 years. The Davidic dynasty doesn't come from him. It comes from Ruth and Boaz, and not from Elimelech. Because who do you think you are, Elimelech, that you think you are Ra'ur, you're fit to be the father or the great-grandfather of the Davidic dynasty of the king himself? And so the rabbis, again, had to spin it in a negative way. Ruth. You got to spin this positive, right? Come on, Ruth's got to go. You have to go positive. And so, what does Ruth mean? And so, there are many midrashim that find positive understandings in the name of Ruth. Just to name one of them, let's see. Okay, why is her name Ruth? Ki ra'ata. She saw ra'ata. She saw the words of her mother-in-law. She saw what was happening to her mother-in-law, and she stuck with that. So ra'ata from Ruth. There's an opinion that says that maybe Ruth was Re'ut, Reish Ayin, Vav Tav. Some of the biblical scholars say that the Ayin dropped. I don't know how it dropped, but the Ayin dropped, and it was Re'ut, friendship, to be close. And we see that she has friendship with her mother-in-law and the people around her. But again, we want to make our heroes look good, and unfortunately, those who are not heroes, not to look so great, but you'll see this all through Tanakh. This always happens. And this is just a style of trying to really understand what had happened. Okay, so we're moving on. We're gonna get through it. Yes?
You could also have that they're different names, but then
yes. Exactly. It could be that they had different names. Tanakh chose this name to send us the message. Definitely, that's true. And that's one of the reasons why is Yocheved and Miriam's name, Shifra and Puat, sending us a message? And Rashi goes on to say that they cooed the babies and they took care of the babies. There's something that they want to teach us here. And it could very well be that they had different names. It could very well be that they have different names, yes. The rabbis teach us that Moshe had seven names. Why did he choose this one? There's always a lot to talk about. Why at times is Yisrael or Yaakov? Why is it Yisrael and sometimes it's Yaakov? Why is Yonatan and sometimes Yehonatan? It's interchangeable. Why does that happen? So again, at certain times it's Yonatan, sometimes Yehonatan. It depends. Depends on the situation, and there's a lot to discuss about that as well. Okay, so let's move on. Pasuk, Pit. One more thing. Guys, I'm telling you, we'll finish by 9. I promise. We're finishing by 9 o'clock. Not a minute after that. How could it be that they married Moabiyot? How could they marry non-Jewish women? So, what's the simple answer? What? Nobody else is around, so go back to Israel. Right? They converted. Simple answer. They converted. Ibn Ezra says, how could it be that they married non-Jewish women? They converted. Okay, so what now? Why would that be a problem? The what? The whole story doesn't fit, and why not? Okay, so eventually we do see a conversion. Also, towards the end of the perek, Naomi says to Orpah and to Ruth, go back to your God, go back to your people. Well, wait a second. If you once you convert, that the conversion stays, for the most part. Okay, there's a lot of discussion about that nowadays. But for the most part, once you convert, the conversion stays. No matter what happens, the conversion stays. So if that's the case, and she says, go back to your God, go back to your people, so it must be that they didn't convert. Second question, just historically, was there a Beit Din in Moab? was there Chabad in Moab that they were able? Jews didn't live in Moab, right? Jews didn't live in Moab. He went to Moab because he wanted to get away from Jews. And so was there a Beit Din there? How can it be? And so one opinion says, semi-conversion. They like converted, like accepted themselves the Torah, but there was no real Beit Din to convert them. But they dipped in the mikvah. And, all right, something like that, b'di'evet conversion. So again, we have Ibn Ezra says, no, they converted, it must be that they converted. His other opinion says, come on, how did they convert that? It's not possible. There was no Beit Din there to convert them. Plus, we have psukim that indicate that they didn't convert. And the third opinion, that they married Moabite, non-Jewish women. And eventually, that could be why they ended up dying. Maybe God was punishing them. How dare you do that? Not only did you leave the land of Israel, but you went ahead and you married Gentiles. Nachlon v'kiliyon. Kiliya, destruction, end of it. It's time for Naomi to go back home. It's time for Naomi to go back to Beit Lechem. And so that's the discussion that the Mefarshim have. Again, it's a very important theological question. Rabbis, some of the Mefarshim want to say, it can't be that they didn't marry someone without converting. And then there are those who look at the Pesukim and say, it just doesn't make sense that they converted. It doesn't make sense. Something to keep in mind. Okay, so here we go. So now they return from the Sde, the field of Moab. She heard, oh, look at that. There's food back in Israel. And now it's time for me to go back to the mother country. So she leaves that from that place that she was there. And her two daughter-in-laws, Ima, were with her. Now they're going back to the land of Yehuda. It's where she's from. It's time to go home. It's time to see her family. It's time to see the community. And they are on the way. So Naomi says to her two daughter-in-laws, Lechna shovna isha levet imat. It's time to go back to your mothers. Go back to your homes. Go back to your place. God should have mercy. Should deal with kindly with you, just like you dealt kindly with the dead and with me. So who are the dead? Probably the two sons, right? Probably the two sons. Why would we think otherwise? Maybe someone else. We're not sure. But you could assume it's their husbands or her husband, Elimelech. Maybe she's referring to something else. So let's just keep that in mind for a moment. So she says, it's time for you to go back home. They embrace each other and they cry. It says, goodbye. You know, you were so good to me for 10 years. You're the best mother-in-law I've ever had. You're the best daughter-in-law. I wish I could have daughter-in-laws like you. Right? What a beautiful story. Just this is a reason to read Megillat Ruth, right? Just for this. This is amazing. But Tomer Naomi, so Naomi says, Shovna binotai, my daughters, go back. Lama telach na'imi. Why? Pasuk Yuva, Tomar na'la, ki itach nashuv le'amech. No, they say to her, no, we're going to come back with you to your people. La'amech to your people. What does that indicate? Did they convert? Did they not convert? To your people, you're right. We're one. Our people. We're one people right now. No, we're going to go back to your people. One of the proofs that they might not have converted. Vatomer Naomi, shovna binotai, lama telach naimi. No, don't come back with me. Haod li bani b'me'ai v'yulachem l'anashim. I don't have any more sons. You want to come back with me because you want to marry my other sons? I don't have any more children. I'm sorry, I can't help you. There's no family, there's nothing here for you. It's time for you to go back. I mean, Naomi here is speaking with such love and care for her daughters-in-law. Like, I really care about you. There's nothing for you to do. Don't come back. Don't come back with me. Go back to your people. Go back to your family. They'll take care of you there. Don't stay with me. It's not worth it. Now, Shovna benotai lechna ki zakanti miyot li'ish. I'm old and means I can't get married, which means I can't have any more children for you to marry. She says, even if I were to get married, right? She says, you think there's hope for me? Right? And even if I was a husband tonight, Am I going to have sons? Right? What's how is that going to happen? Ha'le'an tisaberna ad asher yigdalu alan te'agna livuti yod ish. And even if I do have a kid, and by the time they get older enough to get married, who knows what's going to be with you? You might be old enough where you can't have children anymore. This is a terrible, terrible relationship. It's not going to work. I have to go back to my place, and you go back to your place. Abenotai ki mar li me'od mikem. Very bitter. My life is bitter. Don't come back with me. Ki yatza biyad Hashem. Because Hashem has gone forth against me. God is not with me. That's a very long speech. How many times do you have to say, don't come with me? No, we want to come. No, don't come. No, we want to come. Don't come back. This is extremely, and we see here, first of all, how Naomi cares about her daughter-in-laws, but soon we're going to see that when Ruth accepts, eventually says, I want to come back with you, we see how important it is for Ruth, who wants to join the Jewish people. I want to convert. I want to be with you. I really want this part of me. Don't let me go back home. Vatisena kolam vatifkena od. Again, they cry again. Right? They cry. And what happens? Vatishak orpa lachamota v'ruach davkaba. Orpa kisses her. V'ruach davkaba. And so v'rut davkaba. And Ruth stayed with Naomi. So we have Orpa who goes home. She turns her neck. She turns her back. Orith is the neck. She turns her neck and her back to Naomi and goes home for the name Orpah from the Oref itself. Yes?
Does anybody ever comment that perhaps Naomi was embarrassed that these Moabites might be coming back to Israel?
So that's very interesting. I thought of that. I haven't seen anything about that. I thought of that because when you look at the Lashon, the language, right, she says it's smar, it's bitter. The end of the parak, when they get to Beit Lechem, she says it's ra, it's bad. I was wondering the same thing. Now that she's coming back with this Moabite, hey, where have you gone lost for 10 years? Where's your husband? Oh, he's dead, I'm so sorry. Where are your kids? I'm so sorry. Who's this? You don't know, where's she from? Moab? You left our country to go marry your kids, to go marry Moabites? And now you come back? Oh, it must be that God punished you. Because imagine what the embarrassment when she comes in. Imagine what people are saying. So I that's what I thought, that maybe it's ra. She says it's bad towards the end because she feels so embarrassed. How could anything be good anymore in her life? It's over. Her life is over. So definitely a good suggestion. We're on the same page on this one. I haven't seen it. Yeah, I'll take a closer look at that piece. I have not seen it, no. And so Ruth Dafkaba, cling to her. The word dafka, lidbok, is a word that doesn't just mean to follow them, but it really means to be attached almost. Right? We have Adam and Chava, right? They were devukim. They were ish, right? That a man is devukim b'basar echad. That they were together in one flesh, meaning that there's something. What?
It's
glued. It's intertwined. Meaning now. Glued to the point where Ruth is not separating from her. Nothing is going to separate them. To the point where we see Ruth's unbelievable chesed, where all she cares about is my mother-in-law. What can I do for my mother-in-law? We're going to read through Perek Bet and through Perek Gimel, and we're going to see, what can I do for my mother-in-law? It means for me to go to the field and to gather wheat? I'll do that. It means for me to go ahead and sleep with Boaz so you could have a grandchild? I'll do that. And we're going to see what all of this means. But she's devuka, so close to her mother-in-law, that she's ready to do things that normally people would not do for anyone and for their mother-in-law. Right? Just not like that. And we're going to see the importance of the word davak. Vatomer hine shava yivemtech el amav el eloha pasuk tatvav. And she said, look, Shava Yivimtech, your sister-in-law, Yivimtech from the word Yivama, your co-wife, your sister-in-law, meaning the one who is married, sorry, your sister-in-law, the ones who's married to your brother-in-law, El Amav El Allah, she went back to her people and to her God. She didn't convert, she went back to her God. Shuvi Acharei Yivimtech, go and follow her. Again, how many times? But Tomer Rut Atifgi Bila Zvech L'Shum Acharayach, Ruth says, that's it, enough, stop. Don't urge me. I'm done. Stop asking me to go back. I've made my decision. I am here with you. I am divuka. I've already stuck to you. It's crazy glue. You can't separate us. Ki el ashetelchi elech, v'ashetalini alin, amech ami, v'elohaych elohay. We're so dvukim. We're so glued together. Wherever you go, I go. Wherever you sleep, I sleep. Whoever your people is my people, and whoever your God is my God. At this point, Ruth seems like she's taking one of the steps of conversion, and that is Kabbalat on Malchut Shamayim. It's accepting God and accepting the old mitzvah, accepting the mitzvah. Ruth says, I accept myself, I accept it upon myself, I am with you, I am with your people, I am with your God. Let's go. We are going to Beit Lechem. Ba'asher tamuti amut v'sham ekaver, wherever you die, I'll die. The only way we're going to separate is death. So she saw, okay, wow, that's a very strong speech. Very powerful speech. I'm yours, we're together. It's like exchanging vows over here, right? I'm with you at all times. So now they come back to Beit Lechem. Excellent. Excellent. That was going to be my next point. What happens here is, who was it? Avram and Yitzchak. It's the same words when they went to the Akedah, to the point where they both had the together. We are going for the common cause. We are going to make it, at least for my father, to be together with my father. My father is going to the Akedah. I'm following him and I'm with him. My father didn't tell me what it's going to be like there. I'm following and I'm with him. Ruth says, I don't know what Beit Lechem is like. I'm following her. I'm following the older person telling me this is the way. I'm doing it. No matter what, I'm there because I'm so davuk and I am so close. And yes, we do see there are a lot of parallels. And this I did not go through. There are a lot of parallels from this book of Ruth to the book of Bereshit. A lot of parallels. And one of the reasons is because Ruth is the beginning of the Davidic dynasty. It's almost like a rebirth of the world. That now we see the kings, which is such an important part of Jewish history, it begins at then. Maybe God willing, next year, if we do Ruth again, maybe we'll get a little deeper into that idea. But for now, I promised you not, so I have one more minute. Ani me'le'a halachti v'rekam ha'shivani. Sorry. V'tomer alein atikrena li Naomi. Karana li mara ki amar shadai li me'od. Don't call me Naomi more, call me Mara, bitter. Ani mele'a halachti v'rekam ha'shivani. Hashem, I came with full. I came with a lot of money. I come back empty-handed. Lama tikreni li Naomi? Why do you call me by Naomi, which means pleasant? Hashem anabi v'shadai herali. God did bad. He did not help me here. The word shin dalid yud is used many times in what book? Eov. Embrishit. Yes, but Eov. The Shin Dalet Yud is used so many times in the book of Eov. Seems like it's a name where they try to bring it to God. How could you do this to me? It's so bad. My life is so bad. My Shaddai, which means Shaddai, God, enough. Shaddai, die is enough. God, enough. It's so much, so painful. It's so painful. Enough. So Ruth and Eov, many here in the book of Ruth, she's saying, enough. I had enough from this. V'atashov Naomi v'Ruth ha'movia kalata ima hashava misdei Moab v'hem abau Beit Lechem betchila kitzir seorim. And now they come to Beit Lechem, the beginning of the barley harvest. Pasuk Chaf and Chaf Aleph. There are 9 times where Naomi speaks in first person. She's almost, you could feel, you're feeling it, how terrible her life is. You're in her shoes and you feel, poor woman, lost her husband, lost her money, lost her sons. One daughter-in-law is not with her. She only has one daughter-in-law with her left. She comes back to Beit Lechem. Probably nobody wants to take her in. It's so tough. It's so difficult. What's going to happen in Perek Bet? B'ezrat Hashem, next week we'll pick up on that. Yes? Please. Naomi.
It was all
God's request
to have her, not her choosing to leave her.
Excellent. Yes. So I think the choosing to leave was not her decision.
Okay.
Followed Elimelech. And definitely the question of the two daughter-in-laws, how could she allow her sons to marry Moaviot? So that's definitely a good question. Maybe that's proof to Ibn Ezra that they converted, and so... Yeah, it's hard. Yeah, she should definitely. Yeah, I'm not sure. It seems like she is putting the blame, just like Eov many times would put the blame. Well, Eov had a little bit of a different life. Eov had a little bit of a different life. But here too, she seems to put the blame on God.
Not accepting it, right.
Right. Yeah, definitely a good question. Okay.